You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast, and to our Forest Ramble discussion for March 2024. I'm your host, Rich Ferraro, and unbelievably, this is already our 50th podcast of the season. In this edition, we will cover refereeing. Are the men in black letting down the team in red, or do all Premier League teams suffer equally? As the club and the council hit an impasse, could Forest really leave the City Ground? And on a similar topic, we discuss fan safety in terms of stewarding, standing and sitting. As usual, we'll also hear the opinions of you, the listeners, we'll have a new monthly quiz and Jeremy Davis will be along with his latest sketch. All this and more coming up in this episode of 1865, the Intelligent Nottingham Forest Podcast. Now, let's say hello to today's panel, and bearing in mind that we're recording this on the Monday after the Liverpool game, on a scale of 1 to 10, Baz, how angry are you feeling today about the match and about the referee?
Probably at the moment about 1 or 2. I've spent most of the day at around a 6 or a 7, risking stroke and a heart attack and cardiac arrest, but it's kind of just hit, well, I'm sure we'll talk about this in a bit, but it's kind of hit me that no one cares outside of Nottingham. So what's the even point?
Okay. And just for scale, how did you feel on Saturday evening and most of Sunday?
25.
Okay. Well, enough said. We will come back to you a little bit later. George Edwards, how do you feel on that 1 to 10 today?
Today, it's been a few days. It seems like it was about a year ago, given how much we've seen the story develop, to be fair. Probably about a 4. I mean, I've got to be honest, at the full-time whistle, it was like kicking off. Everyone was kicking off. I was just sort of sat there like empty. I was just like head in my hands. I could not believe it because it's like we've seen it all before, haven't we? And it didn't surprise me. So, yeah, I was just like a bit empty. And then the anger crept in and I was angry at Forrest not clearing that ball away as much as it was at Paul Tierney. So, yeah, I think I'm like Baz. I've calmed down quite a lot since the final whistle. But you go on Twitter and then you see someone call Forrest out for being ridiculous and then you're back on that anger scale, aren't you? So I think until the next match comes along and we can put it to bed, I think we're always going to still be feeling it.
Yeah, and George, just so you know, as you've been... You're young enough to have not experienced relegation as a Forest supporter, but unfortunately I have to break it to you. That feeling of emptiness and being resigned, that's what relegation feels like. Last but not least, Stephen Topless.
I'm a 6 or 7 on the scale. I made the mistake earlier of going on to social media and seeing Liverpool fans piling in on Forest tweets about the incident and basically saying, well, what about the one at the other end with the goalkeeper? Or what about Ryan Yates' high boot that's nowhere near Kanate's head? I'm sure if Liverpool were on the receiving end of that decision, they'd walk away and accept it quietly, wouldn't they?
Well, yes, quite. Let's just start off with that, Stephen. So, this shows that the camera does lie, because there's that still image which appears to suggest that Ryan Yates was going in to kick Konate in the head, and that's why he got the head injury. And Yates should have been sent off, but then actually you look at it from another angle and Yates's feet was nowhere near it. And if he'd made contact with the ball and it had gone in, it would clearly have been a goal. It wouldn't have been disallowed for a high boot or anything. So it's no more a high boot than Johan Wisser's rather excellent bicycle kick that he scored with. So, yeah, I mean, it suggests to me, Stephen, and tell me if you disagree, that there's a lot of Liverpool fans commenting on it who weren't really at the game and probably weren't even watching at the time.
Yeah, and they're not really qualified to have an opinion on it, quite frankly, because it's there, clear as day, what happened. And how can you argue with the fact? How can you argue with the rules? The referee implemented the rules incorrectly. It worked heavily in Liverpool's favour. There's a good chance that they wouldn't have gone up the other end and scored had he not given the ball back to them, Paul Tierney. And we wouldn't be having this conversation now. And who knows, Forrest might well have gone on and got a goal, because they had all the momentum and all the pressure at that point. And the referee's actions, as Jermaine Genius rightly said on Match of the Day, it took all that pressure off Liverpool and allowed them to go up the other end of the pitch. I just can't get my head around how people don't care about this so much outside of Forest, and how Liverpool fans can look at this incident and try and claim that Forest are wrong for protesting it. It just baffles the mind.
George, I'm going to come back to you on this one, because as Stephen alluded to, when Liverpool were clearly done wrong by an offside call against Tottenham, they were saying the match should be replayed. Now, that was a case of getting the rules wrong, or rather the interpretation of the rules wrong. So VAR should clearly have seen that there was an offside, and they didn't, use the tools at their disposal to implement the laws correctly. This was something different. This was a referee not knowing how to implement the rules of the game. He got the actual rule wrong. It's literally his job. His one job is to know the rules of the game. And it's very clear. And R. Jamie posted on social media earlier today that there's a piece of footage which clearly demonstrates that the fourth official was telling the ref, no, you have to give it back to Forrest in the corner. So to me, that's why this one feels particularly galling. It's the referee not knowing the rules of the game. You've got one job, man.
It's baffling how they can continue to make these seemingly basic errors that you include the Liverpool fans in it. I'm sure them at the time would have said the ball should go back to Forrest. So 29,000 people can see, yet the one guy in the middle can't. And I don't see at the minute the need for linesmen and fourth official, because they are at the minute utterly useless, especially linesmen. Now, the most obvious offside call, they'll never put the flag up. They wait 9 times out of 10 to give throw-ins until the referee's decided. I cannot see at the minute what influence a linesman has on a game, because one of those four officials plus the VAR, and I get they can't get involved in it, but someone's got to have a word with Paul Tierney and say, look, mate, Forrest have the ball on the left wing, it's their ball. And the thing that sort of does baffle me a little bit is how both sort of teams retreated the situation. I thought Forrest would have like stayed completely in the box ready for it to restart, whereas we sort of backed off, and that in a way maybe made the referee think it was Liverpool's ball. But the lino, obviously that's just a picture and we don't know where he was pointing, what he was pointing at. But these officials are just getting ridiculous. And on the Liverpool thing earlier in the season, Jurgen Klopp has bullied Paul Tierney for I don't know how long. But in the media, he says things about Paul Tierney that aren't right and shouldn't be targeted at a referee. And Nuno Espirito Santo could have quite easily come out of the game and slandered the referee, but he probably quite rightly said, look, I'm not going to comment on it. And we know his interviews are quite short, but that was a particularly short and blunt one. And you notice the YouTube video Forrest put out, they very quickly cut off the end because Colin Frey said he walked off. But Jurgen Klopp, he bullied him in the game. He was shouting at him and screaming at him. And Tierney came over and he'd have booked him at any other point, but didn't book him. And I think that maybe has played into it, because as a Liverpool fan, you'd love Jurgen Klopp and having him on your side, but he's got that influence, and I think he could have equally influenced the referee's decision making there as well.
Baz, we're in a division where we are supposed to have the elite referees from this country, many of whom are on the FIFA list. Paul Tierney is supposed to be one of the most senior officials in the country, and he doesn't know the laws of the game. In our group chat, we were also discussing that there's at least five or six occasions this season which appear to have cost Forest. So the ones that I listed off the top of my head were the red card and penalty given against us at Man United, the penalty that wasn't given to Ryan Yates against Everton, obviously the Willy Bolly red card, which was up there as being a baffling one, and then not giving the penalties against Newcastle and West Ham, and then, of course, this last weekend. And I don't think that's even all of the instances. Can you think of any more? You were thinking about making a list, weren't you?
Yeah, I've not really had time to do it fully.
It's because you didn't have a week to research it.
And there was obviously Ivan Toney as well, moving the line. And I think, like, you could argue they all changed the game in some way, but you could argue that, Like with Liverpool, yeah, we should have cleared our lines. And if Alanga scored earlier, then it would be a different story. So to some extent, it's in our hands. But it also changes the game. The penalty against Newcastle, if we get given that and we score it, then it's 3-2 to us and Newcastle aren't hitting us on the break. And so you could look at all the incidents and you could say, right, if everything goes our way, then this is what the outcome could have been. And if everything, even if we get the decision and it doesn't go our way, this is what the outcome would have been. And I reckon, having added, I think I've got seven different things. So the ones you mentioned, plus Ivan Toney as well. And I reckon,
I'd obviously blocked that one out of my mind because that made me furious, the fact that,
it's the fact that everyone was going, he moved the ball, everyone moves the ball. He didn't move the ball, he moved the line.
Yeah, well, and actually, this is the point I was about to make, and Stephen, I'm going to come to you as well, is that the reaction in the media seems to be just like, well, yeah, but Forest have to do better. Forest should have told the ref that Ivan Toney moved the ball and moved the foam.
Yeah.
That's as George said, there's four officials plus VAR. Even if VAR is out of their jurisdiction, are they not in the ref's ear going, hang on, you might want to have a look at that, mate? Can they not do that? And even if not, there's three other officials who are watching what's going on. It was on the Toney free kick was on the linesman's side. Were they not watching? What are they exactly paid to? Stephen, what are they paid to do?
You tell me. Toney moving the line is cheating. Konate faking a head injury is cheating. And players are being allowed to get away with this. The referees, I don't think, are fit for purpose. You know, if we got rid of all of the referees and brought in a fresh slate, brought in the best referees from overseas, I'd be all for it, because officials in the Premier League, both in the VAR room and out in the stadiums, are not fit for purpose. And what happened on Saturday has been building for a while. And I think referees in the stadiums are afraid to make decisions because they think they've got VAR there to back it up. And VAR will intervene. VAR clearly can't intervene and doesn't want to intervene when clear and obvious mistakes are being made. So you're creating this void and this lack of decision-making, which is, it's hurting the game. And Forest, more than any other club, have really been on the receiving end of it this season.
George, you wanted to come in there?
Yeah, I just thought I'd give a bit of insight on one of the decisions. So on last Wednesday, before I came for the Man United game at uni, we had the PGMOL come in and they brought their VAR experience. And one of the referees that came in was Tim Robinson. And we had him it was the VAR for the West Ham game. That's obviously one of the decisions that we didn't get, the Nico Williams stamp. So I made it. There was two lines. I could have gone for him or there was one from the WSL. I made sure I got him and I asked him about the decision. And he said that he saw it straight away, as we all did, because I wasn't at the game. And he said he initially thought it was a penalty, right? He saw it and thought it was a penalty. But the assistant VAR said to him, oh, I'm not sure about that. And then they looked through the angles and then the doubt was put into his head. And it's almost like there's too many voices there. And in the end, he said check complete, no penalty. And then he said to me that instantly, as soon as he said that, he thought, I've made a mistake there. And that just shows that maybe they have the right instincts, but there's too much going on nowadays for them. And I don't think that helps. And on the thing Stephen said about Konate and the head injury thing, that is becoming such a thing now. And you see Bruno Fernandes, who rolled around the other day, that viral clip on TikTok that Ten Hag's came out defending him for. Things have got to be done to stop that. And I don't know what it is, especially with head injuries, because that's an easy thing to enforce. You have to stop the game for a head injury, but they maybe could be forced to go off the pitch for 30 seconds like you are for any normal circumstances, because that would stop it. You know, if you go down with a head injury and the game stopped, regardless of whether the medical teams come on, you go off the pitch for 30 seconds and get assessed. And that would cut it out, wouldn't it? Because the second the whistle blew up, Konate got up. And it wasn't surprising, but it shouldn't be a thing in modern football.
Baz, on Stephen's point that he made, and actually this does come to George's point as well. It's all very well saying, oh, we could have they do officiating much better in other countries, but everything that the Premier League and Pogmol touch turns to, well, it's got the reverse Midas touch. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I don't really have the words. It's like the only thing that the rest of the world seems to be saying is just deal with it because everyone's got the same thing. And if I'd had the time, I would have gone through lots of matches and tried to figure it out. I think Brighton have had three apologies this season, and we've had three apologies.
Wolves.
And Wolves. So maybe that there is some equality in it, but it doesn't feel like that at the moment. Not at all.
But Brighton, Wolves and Forest, none of them are top six teams.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you look at Bruno Fernandes in the cup match just after the Fulham match, and it's very, very clear what he's doing. And yet he never gets a yellow card. He never gets a yellow card for whinging at the ref. Nothing ever happens. Depending upon, you know, and every team is a victim of bad decisions because humans make decisions. But it's notable, isn't it? Wolves, Brighton and Forest, three teams who would be regarded as being outside of the elite, who would be regarded historically as being not Premier League clubs. I mean, I'm trying not to get conspiratorial, but the longer you talk about it, the harder it becomes.
Well, I made the point when I was doing the match report with Stephen the other day. I went through that list today and I said, like, in the best case scenario, we would have got this many points out of that game. But if the decision had gone our way, we would have got this many points. If the decision had gone our way and we'd still screwed it up, then we'd have got this many points. I reckon it's between three. In the worst case scenario, the referee gives us a decision the way that it was supposed to go, that we feel it should have gone, and we still screwed it up, we'd be 3 points better off now. But if the best case scenario, and the referee gives us a decision, then I'd say we'd be 11 points better off. And if you're, I don't know, even if you're Brighton, being 11 points better, worse off is going to affect you quite a bit. But when you're in our situation, being 11 points worse off it's going to put us down. And that's kind of why... What I was saying earlier is like I'm where George was originally, which is I'm just numb to it now. I was saying we could win every single game for the rest of the season by four clear goals, and we're still going down because something will happen, because it's pointless, literally pointless.
George, I'm going to come back to you about the media thing because you know you are studying sports journalism. That's how you get the audience with Pogmol and this kind of thing. As somebody who's a student of journalism, does the media reaction, the clickbait, Talk Sport, Daily Mail type stuff, does that get on your tits?
It gets on everyone's tits, doesn't it? But it's what you have to do to sell stories, to broadcast your radio, to get more views, to get more paper sales, because an essay I did last year, a controversy sells. You know, if you're going to put good news stories out, it doesn't sell. And at the top of every TalkSport bulletin, at the forefront of most newspapers, it's a bad news story because people love reading bad news stories. That's why the actual news is full of bad news stories. And yes, sport is maybe a bit more lighthearted than the serious world that we're in. But normally the leading story is, unless a team's won something like the FA Cup, the Champions League, something like that, controversy sells. And that's why Forest don't really get much of a mention in the media, unless we've either caused an upset on the Big Six and that goes against the Premier League narrative, or if something unjust has happened against us, because stories like that that will cause controversy, that will cause comments online and interactions with Post, is ultimately what they're striving for. And if they're coming on, you know, they weren't going to go on praising Chris Kavanagh, who I can remember he had a good game against us at Newcastle, played two good advantages, but that wasn't mentioned at all, because who is bothered about a referee that's doing his job right? These bad stories sell. And unfortunately, the stories of referees doing good things are very sparse.
And Stephen, I started this little segment with you asking about media reactions. It's worth noting there's a lot of Forest fans who work in the media. So we had Jermaine Genus on Match of the Day on Saturday, and he got ridiculed for saying it changed the dynamic, which is exactly the point which we've been making. We've got Danny Taylor and a whole host of Forest fans like Nick Miller. And we've got Paul Taylor, who's not a Forest fan, but is the Forest correspondent at The Athletic. We've got Danny Story at The Eye. There's a lot of Forest fans in the media. And yet still, the media coverage of Forest seems to be focused upon, hey, let's all laugh at them. And yet Burnley have spent, what, £130 million? And no one's putting the same opprobrium to them as Forest have had for the last year and a half. What's going on?
I think we've come up and we've dared to compete and do things a bit differently. We haven't just accepted our place as cannon fodder at the bottom of the league, come up, be grateful for the parachute payments, go back down again and keep bouncing between the two divisions.
And does that include the reaction to Marinakis coming pitch side because he was so disgusted at what he saw from the referee?
Yeah, it does. And we are not one of the top six clubs. A few weeks ago, Richard Masters was talking about clubs like us almost being insignificant in the Premier League.
Oh, yeah, we're small clubs, yeah.
We're small clubs, and that's what we mean to them. That's what we mean to the rule makers and to the bigwigs of the Premier League. And it stinks.
So actually, it's not a conspiracy, is it? You've just proven the point, haven't you? Like, because, yeah, when Richard Masters is talking about teams who aren't in the top six, the Big Six, as being small clubs, well, that proves our point. We could go on and we could rant about this forever. We have got a few other things that we want to talk about. So I'm going to move on for the sake of our blood pressure, if nothing else. Having tried to be serene, I noticed that Baz was getting steadily more excited throughout that discussion. So let's move on to another pressing issue. So Forest Chairman Tom Cartledge gave an interview last week announcing that the club and Nottingham City Council had ceased discussions about the future of the City Ground. The council are, of course, in massive financial trouble. They want to raise the rent from £250,000 to £1 million per annum. George, how important is it for you as a young fan that we stay at the City Ground? And also, what do you make of the impasse between the club and the council?
It's massive for us staying at the City Ground, because that's all I've known football to be. And even the Trent End being the two-story thing that it is, the weird curve in the Bridgeford stand, all of that has been what I've known Forest as and known football as. And it would be heartbreaking if Forest weren't to play there, you know, finding the same spot in Lady Bay every time. And when it's missing, we have to drive another 5 minutes down the road in an extra walk. All things like that that add to the match day experience and that make you want to come back. The walk to McDonald's, it all adds to the same thing. And if Forest were to move away from the City Ground because of this ridiculous City Council vendetta that they've got, and I can understand them trying to get more money, and the Premier League is a bit much bigger pool than wherever we were when we originally negotiated the lease. So you can see why they're asking for a little bit more money. But to drive Forest out is ridiculous. On Tom Cartledge, I am quite happy to see him at the top of the club, because he just seems a bit more involved than maybe Nicholas Randall was. And that's not a criticism of him, but even I saw a post on Instagram, and Matt Turner's wife had posted a picture, and that was with Tom Cartledge, and they were at an event. And it just seemed like he wants the best for the club. And obviously, we don't know what happens behind the scenes, but as a fan, I would want someone like him leading the club forward to do what's best for the club. And I trust that he will, and he won't take any, can I say, can I swear?
Nonsense.
Yeah, there you go. It won't take any nonsense from the council. And I mean, I think it's a ploy from the club trying to say that we'll move away in a hope that things, you know, smooth themselves out. But yeah, if Forest were to play away from the City Ground, I mean, I think we all know that the main stand needs developing, that things need to develop. And if worst case for me, it would be the City Ground being destroyed and rebuilt on the same site. But moving away from the City Ground would be heartbreaking, to be honest.
Stephen, do you think that this is just a bit of brinksmanship on both sides? And I'm just going to put it out there. Is it reasonable for the council to ask a Premier League club to pay £1 million a year in rent?
I can understand the council wanting more money because Forest are now in the Premier League and they're generating more income as a result. But if I was the council, I'd be looking at it and thinking, well, raise the price, but not to, up to £1 million. That just seems extortionate. You're hurting one of your city's key commodities doing that. The council should be looking at Forest as a Premier League club and actually looking to use that profile to boost the city even more, because it is. It's big news that Forest are back in the Premier League. It brings in more fans, more tourists, more people staying over, more people visiting Nottingham, because it's got a greater national and global profile now in football and in sport. So I agree with the point that Tom was making. I think it might have been Friday Five where he says the council and their decision making doesn't seem to help the club sometimes. And I agree with it. I see councils around the country seem to really help the football clubs to thrive and really support them in developing, and whether that's new training grounds, improving stadiums. Forests and the City Council don't seem to have that same approach, and it's a shame, because if you took emotion out of it, moving to a new stadium would make sense because you'd have better facilities, getting to and from the ground would probably be much easier, and you'd have brand new stadium and facilities in place for, I don't know, 50, 60, 70 years, however long. But Forest would lose so much by leaving the City Ground. Other clubs have gone through that themselves. I think of Coventry and Highfield Road. I think their fans, 20 years on, still miss Highfield Road, for example, and what that meant to them. And I do worry that we'd lose a bit of our identity if we moved away and just up sticks and found a new stadium on the outskirts of the city. It just wouldn't be the same.
Baz, you wanted to come in there, but also, you know, you and I are the ones on this panel who remember going to the City Ground, not only before the Trent End was built, but before the Bridgford End was built, when there's terraces at both ends. So, I mean, from a rational point of view, you would say that the new stadium makes sense. I mean, we might have hot water, if nothing else. But yeah, I mean, equally, football is not a rational thing. And if nothing else, that view over the, when you walk in over the bridge and you see the Trent End hovering on the riverside, there's a reason why people are so emotional about it.
One of the things I wanted to mention was that I read a thing with Jose Mourinho, and it was during Euro 96. And he wasn't famous then. He was still like one of the coaches at Barcelona under Bobby Robson, but not even like the assistant coach. I think it'd be like he hadn't made his name in any way. And when he heard that the matches were in Nottingham, he went to the city centre and walked from the city centre all the way to the City Ground. And when he, because he wanted to see what it was like where Brian Clough had managed. And he said he just stopped when he got to the centre of Trent Bridge, as everyone does, to look out at, over it. And it's just amazing. But I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this either, but in the council's defence, it's three councils that are involved in all the decisions so far. But now it's the City Council that seems to be the sticking point. But the reason for that is because of the, as I understand it, because they've declared bankruptcy, they're not in control anymore, and it's central government administrators,
the commissioners,
that are running it. So their decisions will have absolutely nothing to do with the long-term future of the city, and it will just be about money. And that's probably going to make things a lot worse.
And going back to the point that Stephen was making about, I suppose, whether the club, should the council be doing something more to keep the club on side? Our very own Ellie had written on the BBC website, the council is leaving Forest with no options. As a fan, the last thing I want to see is us move away from the City Ground. What we've got is so special, such a brilliant atmosphere, and I really don't want to become one of those soulless tin pot clubs. What the club brings to the city is huge, and especially now they're in the Premier League. They should be wanting to help Forest maintain their Premier League status so that businesses can grow even more. And that goes for so much. It goes not only for the catering outlets in and around the ground, but visiting fans will quite often come in through the station. They'll wander into town because it's so close. Nottingham is such a compact place that having a Premier League club there in the heart, you know, or within walking distance of the city centre is surely something that should be treasured, I would have thought. We will talk a little bit more about the ground in part two. We'll also hear from you, the listeners, and we'll have our Forest quiz.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
As always, this episode of the 1865 podcast is sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. The league season is entering the business end, and Green King Sport venues are showing every single televised Forest fixture across the 23-24 season. And with more than 900 sports pubs across the UK, it doesn't matter where you're based, you can catch every single minute of the action. Football is best enjoyed with your mates, so if you're not at the ground this month, then get a text in the group chat. Head to your local Green King Sports venue to catch the game, and don't forget to download the Green King Sport app to enjoy exclusive competitions and discounts whenever there's a game on. Now, it's back to your Forest Ramble podcast.
You're listening to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast.
The 1865 Sketch by Jeremy Davis. Forest's goalkeeping woes this season have put me in mind of something Neville Southall once said about his defenders being like chess pieces. If I get them in the right place, I don't have to do anything. If only the likes of Turner and Searles could get their chess pieces in the right place, then maybe they would stop doing things that cost Nottingham Forest goals. Analogies with the ancient sport of chess are as old as football itself. But the fluidity of the modern game, with the interchange of positions, meaning your overlapping centre-back is as likely to put away a spectacular overhead kick as your centre-forward, renders comparisons with the rigid structures and positional rules of the venerable board game looking as dated as Jose Mourinho's tactics or Richard Keyes's views on gender equality. Perhaps other goalkeepers should look for different board games for comparisons. Affairs at Manchester United have in recent times resembled Trivial Pursuit, with the club's top brass seeming much more interested in subjects such as geography and entertainment than sport, and a range of rapacious moneymen competing for a slice of the pie. Across town at the Etihad, Manchester City continue their relentless pursuit of monopoly, although Newcastle's owners are in hot pursuit with the money from taking over all those utilities. At times last season, with all the new faces after promotion, it was sometimes as if Forest were playing a giant game of Guess Who, which might explain the extravagant facial hair adorning the likes of Morgan Gibbs-White. This season the squad is a little more familiar, and with everyone now back from AFCON, one can at least make an educated guess as to who will be in the team each week, meaning they were able to school the boys from the Academy of Football at home to West Ham, even if they flunked the test away at Villa, where, like a teacher who has switched off a bit too much over half term, they forgot to do any marking. Now, we try not to talk about referees here at 1865, mindful of the mantras of Brian Clough, but they have been making it hard to stick to those principles this season. It's difficult to say what game the officials have been playing at the City Ground in recent weeks, although with all the letters we'll be getting from the PGMOL, we might be able to take them on at Scrabble. Acronyms and initialisms like Pugmul are thankfully still not permitted in Scrabble, although they have officially changed the rules in the 2010s to allow the use of names, as anyone who played Scrabble in the unforgiving, uncompromising environment of the 80s and 90s will tell you, the game's gone soft. With yet more controversy surrounding the officiating over Liverpool's late winner last weekend, it's beginning to feel as if Forest and other less established top-flight powers are just pawns in some refereeing game in which the rules are open to interpretation. And we might well see another missive arriving in the post. But having a wide selection of letters might actually be just as well. The way things are going, Forest may end up needing a triple word score to accumulate enough points to avoid checkmate.
Thank you very much, Jeremy, and welcome back to 1865, the intelligent Nottingham Forest podcast, with me, Rich Ferraro. Also, we're here with George, Baz and Stephen. Still to come, we'll have more discussion about matters on and off the pitch, and we'll have a game of our quiz, Guess That Red. Just before then, a few words from our other friends, other than Sports Social Network. So our friends at FanHub, well, you'll know that if you follow us on social media that we post our team predictions on match days. And if you register as a Forest fan on the app, you can gain rewards for your predicted lineups. You can check in on match days and you can use it as a way to stay in touch with your fellow Reds fans. And you gain rewards, which means you can get yourself some merch. Use our golden ticket code 186-ERG and you can skip the waiting list to join the fun. It also supports us here at 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast. We'll post the code and our team selections regularly on social media. You can find all the links at 1865.football. Now, let's hear from you, the fans. We published some polls and we asked your views. So here's what you thought. Our first question was asking, which decision was the worst one that a referee has made so far? And we gave you the options of the Bolly red card, the Taiwo Awoniyi non-penalty against Newcastle, or the Tierney drop ball, and I've given you the option of other. And, well, the Bolly red card has come out very, very strongly in this one. What we found is that we had some comments as well. So Chris says the Worrell red at Man United and the Rashford dive being given as a penalty was a double whammy. We also had several people, Stuart, James and Jim, also Jason, Laith, all saying that the Bolly red card was one of the worst decisions they've seen. It was a new low. It was dreadful, a shocker. We had a couple of people talking about the drop ball. So obviously how it changed the dynamic of the game. And also it's annoying because it's not just a ref interpreting the rules in one way or the other. It was also them getting the actual rules wrong. So that was a pretty decisive vote in favour of the Bolly red card, which has cost NFFC more points this season. Injuries, goalkeepers, referees or anything else? And we found that goalkeepers just about pipped referees. Goalkeepers had 41% of the vote and referees had 37%, with injuries getting 13%. And we had a vote from Dave for set pieces. The next question was, how do you feel about Nuno at Forest? 39% said love him, 51% said not sure yet, and 8% said they prefer Stevie Cooper. Where do you think Forest will finish this season? Well, 75% of you are saying between 13th and 17th, with 23% saying relegation. We had a question about staying at the City Ground. Should Forest stay at the City Ground? Yes, at all costs, gets 53% of the vote. 28% have gone for if the price is right. 14% say it depends where we go. And 5% say I want a shiny new ground. And then the last thing we asked you was to name your player of the season. So we've had a couple of votes for Mangala, even though he's no longer at the club. And that came from Gary and from Labs. We've had votes for Murillo, from Steve, from Allison, and also from Sam. Martin has gone out on a limb and said Ryan Yates. And then we've had also mentions for Alanga from Labs again, from Ian, and also from Garibaldi, Nutt and David. So thank you very much for all of your votes. Just also to mention a couple of honourable mentions for Nico Williams, Harry Toffolo, and also one for Chris Wood. So coming back to our panel, let's pick up on some of those themes. We've already discussed refereeing in some depth, but just quickly, which has cost us more points this season? Has it been goalkeeping, referees, or injuries? What do you think, George?
Is there an option for all three? Injuries has been a big thing, hasn't it? Because I think if we had two fit strikers for the whole season, it'd have been a different story. And if Chris Wood was in the positions that Elanga was in on Saturday, then we wouldn't have been in a position that Liverpool would have been down to a referee, because the injuries would have surpassed that. And you can include AFCON, I suppose, in injuries as well, with the players that went away from there. Turner, I think it's a very close call. I would edge on the side of injuries, which at the minute on Monday is losing the poll. But I would say injuries and selection, because as much as referees have cost us in games, if certain players were available for the whole of the season, I think we would have been in a position to pick up more points than if a certain amount of those decisions had gone in the right way.
Just quickly, Stephen, would you say that it's injuries are something that affect all clubs this season? Last season, Forest seemed to have more of an issue with injuries than compared to other clubs, but this season they seem to have more of an issue with referees than other clubs. What do you think?
Yeah, of course every club has to deal with injuries at some point in the season, but ours have been in very key areas. I think of losing Taiwo, how we did, and we really dropped off when we lost him. Chris Wood, when he got back into form and looked like a real presence up front, was scoring goals, he gets injured. And I think we've lost a bit of edge up front as well as a result. So, yeah, I err on the side of goalkeepers in this, because I think had we sorted out the goalkeeper position and got somebody commanding in and kept somebody at the level of Henderson or Navas from last season, I think we'd be a few points better off. And I think as a whole, the team would be in a far healthier position in terms of where they'd be in the table as well.
And Baz, on the same topic, but then also if you want to give us a feel about how you feel about Nuno as the head coach.
I'd say so. The thing is not just the obvious bit about like Taiwo, basically him turning our season around last year, and we're hoping that he can do it again this year. Chris Wood obviously losing him just as he hits form. Those are the obvious things from injuries, but it's also the fact that we've very rarely been able to put out a consistent selection, and so many of our games that we've lost have been from stupid individual mistakes. And you think, actually, if we had a proper collective, that a consistent selection where everyone knew what everyone else was doing week in, week out, then that kind of stuff would have been stamped out much earlier.
And would you say that's one of the reasons why, despite having three ACLs in one season, Villa are doing quite well, because Emery's quite consistent with his team selection?
Yes, yeah. And I think that sort of thing does make a difference. You have to have some rotation, obviously, but if you've got like a core set, if you remember back in the Championship, and we would be predicting the squad, and it would be like one player, if any, that was different from our predictions, because everyone knew what their jobs were and everyone knew what they were going to be doing that week. And we've not had any of that for the last 2 years. However, I'm actually reasonably confident about Nuno. I'm not confident about us staying up, but I'm quite confident about Nuno. He seems to have picked out the strengths of the side very, very well. And he's playing to them. I had this image of him in mind of being five at the back, low block, hit on the break kind of manager, secure the clean sheet first kind of thing. And he's not turned out that way. And I think that's because he's done his analysis and has said, actually, we won't survive if we do that. So we have to do something else. So I'm quite quietly impressed with him. I also like the way that he repeats himself in every interview as well.
George, what do you think about Nuno? I mean, obviously his interview on post-match interviews on Saturday were the closest we've seen to what Wolves fans told us to expect. But I think that was him preserving his own status, wasn't it?
Yeah, big time. I've got to say, I've been really impressed with him. And I think there is a stark improvement from under Cooper. I don't know if you remember about a month, I think it was the Bristol game or something. There was me and Adam were having a scrap in the group chat about him, and Adam was sort of not convinced by him. But I think I've always been convinced by him. Not the appointment. I think a lot of us were quite underwhelmed because he was brought in as a very similar manager to Steve Cooper. But I think that was a contributing factor to why they appointed him. If you appoint someone like Graham Potter mid-season, it could take 2 to 3 months for something like that to happen. And then you lose, you know, you've lost that down the drain. So I think the improvements have been there from the off, because Forest have looked like scoring more goals. And at times that's been they've conceded more. And he's been up against all those three things we just mentioned, referees, injuries, and the goalkeepers. But I think he's made us look a lot more fluid going forward. We now create chances. And the Liverpool game last season, when we played them, and granted it worked, we won 1-0 and it was one of the most memorable days of the season. But we approached that game, we put about five players in midfield. It was a back four that sat on the edge of the box, and we had a couple of shots and scored. And yes, we lost at the weekend, but that was more of a winning performance because we were willing to play our own game more. We approached it like we were a fellow Premier League time team and they were our equals. We played a high line with pace. We were confident in our abilities. The midfield was balanced. We didn't, you know, drop Gibbs White to play a flat three. It was Yates and Dominguez and a more attacking lineup with two wingers and a striker who ultimately isn't a striker. But, you know, I think, and something else I like about him is that he sees things in players and will stick with them. We're a lot of fans, it took a while to be convinced with Nuno Tavares, but I think a lot of fans now, if he was fit, would play him over someone like Aritofolo. And Nuno has stuck with that. And that's what I like about him, that he's confident in himself. And if he sees something in a player, he'll go with it. So I think there's been a real improvement under Steve Cooper. And I love Steve Cooper and I never want him to be sacked. But since then, I think Forest, attacking-wise, look far better. And over the last few games against United and Liverpool, we've lost them both. But the defensive side now is starting to come.
And Stephen, just very, very briefly, can Nuno save us from relegation?
I think he can. I've seen really good signs from the team, as George has alluded to there. And yes, I think he will do enough to keep us out of trouble.
Well, you are the resident optimist on 1865. I will hark back to what Baz said in part one, which is we could win every game 4-0 and something's going to go wrong. So there's two sides of the coin. Don't say we don't have balance on this podcast. Okay, let's go back to the matter at hand, which is, I did say we'd come back to issues about the ground. And fan safety more generally. George, I'm going to start with you on this one as the person in this particular podcast episode who goes to the most away matches. You go to pretty much every match home and away. And for the second season running, there was some controversy about stewarding at Brentford. Just for your information, listener, we have compiled some responses from fans who feel like the Brentford experience was damaging, was difficult, was unsafe, and we will report back when we can. So at the moment, not much that we can say, but we will report back if there's anything that comes back from that. In the meantime, Forza Garibaldi have recently tweeted about possible safe standing options, and it was in the same week that Forest also put out a notice to home fans telling them not to stand. So George, as somebody who's been uphill and downhill, been to many, many different grounds, what are your thoughts in terms of fan safety and your thoughts on safe standing?
I think safe standing is a thing that we're seeing more and more in football, and rightly so. And you can see why standing was abandoned, obviously, after what happened in 1989. Understandably, it was abandoned. But it seems like football has found a way to introduce it. And undoubtedly, safe standing is a lot safer in away ends and in places like the A block and the Lower Bridgeford for the where the home fans sit. It's far safer than just having seating. I know for a fact that when we go to Premier League grounds, and they're standing because they're going with my grandparents, they feel a lot safer when they've got a barrier in front of them. There's no one going to be coming from behind or from the sides as much. And you just feel a bit more secure, and it's not limiting. You can still move around and celebrate and chat and turn around and talk, but you feel a lot more secure. I think safety in grounds is it's very hit and miss depending on where you go. There's been countless times where you think nothing could go wrong and you feel fine. And then you have the Brentford experience where it was just like they were out to catch everyone out and they were out to start something. I've never been to a place, and I don't know whether it's, you know, increased since then, but I've never been to a place where they check your wallets. And they perhaps didn't do it to me because I'm there with my grandparents, but there was a group of lads in front of us that all three of them were getting, you know, searched through their wallets. And who's ever heard of that in football? And it might be a new initiative put forward, but there's got to be some communication with the fans if something like that's going to happen, because understandably people become defensive in that situation because you've never been exposed to that before. So yeah, I think it's very hit and miss at certain grounds and places like Manchester City, and you know, you feel really safe at some places, and then others it's completely different. So, but on the safe standing thing, I think it's something the club have got to do, because even at Luton they've got safe standing now, and it's a lot more secure, a lot safer to have safe standing, because you can't expect fans to sit down. You know, it's never going to happen. You can put all the statements out that you want, you can ban as many people as you want, but if people are going to stand, they're going to stand. And if you've got a whole block of people standing up, it's better to assist that by having the right infrastructure than to try and oppose it.
Baz, the A block are the ones who want to stand the most, and Lower Bridgford, they're very different places to be, because the Lower Bridgeford is a modern era. I mean, okay, it's 30 odd years old now, but it's a modern era stand where there's a little bit more, the steps are shallower. The A block and the main stand in general is a bunch of seats put on old terracing steps. So I can understand why the club are fearful of losing their safety licence if fans keep standing in those areas, because I think everyone who, not just at football matches, but when you go to gigs and stuff, you've had the experience of people tumbling over your shoulders because they're a bit too exuberant. They fall over the seat back in front, which is what George was alluding to. And rail seating would help prevent that problem, wouldn't it?
Definitely. And it's not even just that. It's like, so where I sit is basically on the halfway line. And as soon as the ball goes up to one of the corners near my side of the pitch, everyone stands to get a better view, which means that everybody in the stand has to stand. It's like you end up standing for the stuff that isn't important, because you're having your view blocked from other stuff, from just people further down standing. So you need to deal with it. The people standing need to be able to stand. That's kind of where I'm going to with this. It's like, yeah, people want to stand. It's better standing. And there's a way of making it happen now, so we should do it.
And Stephen, is it doable without Forest doing redevelopment? I mean, could they take out, could they change, for example, the Lower Bridgford and make rail seating so that fans of both teams can have the option there?
Yeah, I think that would be the most sensible option. Give people who want to stand the choice of doing so. And Lower Bridgford seems like the safest and the best place for it. Because during a game anyway, they're pretty much standing in that area of the ground. So rail seating, I think, would be a safer and just a more practical way of letting it happen. And then anybody who does sit around the ground, who now wants to stand but can't, can go and get a ticket in Lower Bridgford and go and stand. And I think that would work.
And just coming back to you, Baz, very, very briefly, I'm just thinking about 1865 Dad and the fact that as he's now a little bit older and a little bit less supple than he used to be, actually, even in instances like his, rail seating is better, because if he were to stand, then he's got the option of having the rail to lean against and to give him a bit of support as he gets up and gets down again.
Yeah, well, yeah, just the getting up and getting down again is the problem for him. So choosing a position and staying there is probably easier.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Well, we've covered quite a lot in today's podcast, but now it's time for this.
1865. Guess that red.
Yes, it's time for our Forest quiz. And this month it's Quizmaster Stephen, who will be asking us some questions. He will give us the name of a match from Forest's recent past, or maybe not so recent, I don't know. And we need to guess all of the players from that starting 11, and we'll be taking it in turns to do so. So, as always, do play along at home, won't you? And in the meantime, it's over to you, Quizmaster Stephen.
So, in light of Forest's trip to Brighton this weekend, I have picked out Forest's one and only win to date at the Amex Stadium, a 3-2 victory over Brighton in the Championship on the 7th of February 2015. And another little nugget for you, this was Dougie Friedman's first game as Nottingham Forest manager. So, whoever wants to go first can give me a name. Rish.
Mikhail Antonio.
Correct.
Henry Lansbury.
Correct. Yay! Baz.
I really can't remember any of the team from Dougie Friedman's days. Adlan Gediora.
Incorrect.
Oh, you are a bloody disgrace!
Baz, you are out. Rich?
Little Benny Osborne.
Little Benny Osborne is correct.
Oh, that was mine. Right, this is a bit of a risk. Robert Tesher.
Robert Tesher was on the bench.
Oh, come on. You want bloody shooting? Come on, Rich, keep going.
Ah, right. I am then going to go for Britason Balonga.
Britason Balonga started up front. That is correct.
Going to go for Matt Mills.
Matt Mills is incorrect.
He hadn't joined yet, had he?
He hadn't joined.
So Michael Mancien would have worked, but Matt Mills probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
I've got a few. Chris Burke or Oliver Burke?
Yeah, that's correct.
And then I was thinking who would play left back. Danny Pineos?
It's a Danny, but it's not Danny Pineos.
Danny Fox.
Danny Fox.
Who else?
Who scored the goal, Stephen?
Nice try.
So we've got Lansbury,
got Henry Lansbury, Ben Osborne, Mikhail Antonio, Britason Balonga, and Danny Fox so far.
Lehigh.
And Chris Burke we've got as well.
Eric Lehigh?
Eric Lehigh played at right back. Correct.
Hobbs.
Jack Hobbs.
Good call.
Is correct. This midfielder might be a bit of a clue for you. Was not a Forest player, technically. He was on loan.
Gary Gardner.
Gary Gardner, correct.
Yeah.
Any takers for that final player, the centre-back?
Right, so...
Left or right footed?
Oh, I think left. But don't quote me on that.
Who was the other one? Matt Mills?
Jack Hobbs.
Jack Hobbs. Right.
Left footer.
I'm getting a sea of blank faces here.
I've blanked this whole period out of my mind.
Okay, so, final clue.
Final clue. He's Welsh.
Welsh centre-back.
This is poor. I bet the listeners are screaming at us.
And rightly so.
I was 10, I'll just say.
Okay, go on. You get off to tell us, Quizmaster Stephen.
Danny Collins.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was still at Forest. I thought he only stayed for season or whatever. But there you go. Well, thank you, everyone. And as the quiz winner, I get to choose our closing music. And I'm going to go for Dawn Penn with something that Evangelos Marinakis might be saying to Pogmol. You don't love me. No, no, no. Before we leave you, we want to say thank you to today's panel, to Baz, to Stephen and to George, and also to Jeremy for the sketch, and also to producers Romeo and Winston and studio assistant Neville. While we've been recording this podcast, we've heard the breaking news about Felipe making his announcement that he will be leaving Forest this summer, possibly to retire. And I'm sure that we'll cover this in our Friday Five podcast later this week. If you haven't heard it, we discuss the top stories from the City Ground, brought to you by our news hound, Jamie Martin. We'll also be back next weekend with a report on the Brighton game, as we do after every single Forest match. Until next time, thank you very much for listening, and come on, you Reds!
Network.